is the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Boy, Rand Paul is never, ever going to be president of the United States. Neither is Chris Christie. I think you could toss a coin about Jeb Bush. I'm putting my money behind Scott Walker and John Kasich for the Republican nomination anyway. But this, first of all, the Koch brothers thing, there's all this criticism of Rand Paul and his performance when he went out to California to dance in front of the billionaires. And apparently he was just wearing jeans and a blazer and the cowboy boots. And the Koch brothers and all their buddies, they put on a tie to go to the bathroom, right? And so they were offended by the way he was dressing, according to some news reports, article over at Politico. I don't know. But, he's on this crazy fringe, and he keeps going over the edge, Rand Paul. He's got this background of these scandals associated with being on the fringe, hanging out with neo-Nazis and his father hanging out with neo-Nazis and just the whole right-wing fringe. And here's the important thing to know about this. The anti-vaccine shtick that Rand Paul was peddling last night on CNBC is the logical extension of the anti-government pitch that the billionaires teach conservatives to recite that works to the benefit of billionaires economically, right? So in other words, they're basically saying, well, government can't do anything right. Make government smaller. Make government smaller is a euphemism for cut billionaires' taxes. Sometimes they'll say, well, you got to deregulate business. Well, that's a euphemism for, let the people get sick and let the corporations get profitable. And in both cases, it's like, not a good thing for all of us. But all of us is a concept that somehow is alien to these guys. Margaret Thatcher, she didn't start this stuff, but she made it respectable in 1978 when she became Prime Minister of the United Kingdom and said, there is no such thing as society. There is only an aggregation of individuals or a collection of individuals. Or words to that effect. It was very close to that. And what she's saying is, that libertarians, Ayn Rand acolytes, right-wing crazies, Frederick von Hayek folks, von Mises folks, all of these believers in this religion, and it's a religion because there's no objective proof for it. There's never been a successful libertarian country or state in the history of the world. Every time conservative economics has been tried, from moderate conservative economics, which is trickle-down economics here in the United States, we call it Reaganomics, which has basically paralyzed the working class in the United States for the last 35 years in terms of income, while the rich got, the rich and the big corporations and the stock market and everything else, everybody else got richer. Well, not everybody. It was a very small percentage, actually, maybe the top 5%, top 10% got richer. But they pitch this economic shtick of, rugged individualism. It's my money. It's my decisions. Me, me, me. You look at it with a little bit of hindsight and you say, oh, yeah, it's infantilism. Right? They're basically treating us like we are immature children. They're behaving like they are immature children. The first rule of being an infant is me, mine. Right. When you're the first 6 months of life or the first year or two of life, everything in the world revolves around you. The first message of advertising is tell people
you are the most important person in the world and therefore you deserve this cool product that I'm selling.
Reduce people to the status of an infant and then sell them something. Well, it is happening with vaccine and with taxes. I gotta, this is What an amazing day this is. Here's Rand Paul on CNBC last night. You've got this ready to go, Jim? Okay, cool. This is Rand Paul on CNBC last night about talking about vaccines. Take a shot. Take a check.
I've heard of many tragic cases of walking, talking, normal children who wound up with profound mental disorders after vaccines. I'm not arguing vaccines are a bad idea. I think they're a good thing. But I think the parents should have some input. The state doesn't own your children. Parents own the children, and it is an issue of freedom.
Yeah. The reason why you have heard those walking, talking cases is because usually autism symptoms start showing up in a really significant way around 2, 3, 4 years old. And the vaccines are happening at a year and a half, 2 years, a year. And so, of course. Now, I think that there's a reasonable dispute about whether we should be putting mercury-based preservatives in vaccines, but the fact of the matter is that since that research came out years ago on thimerosal, most vaccines don't have it anymore. And you can specifically ask for vaccines that have no thimerosal. They're called the single-dose vaccines. They have no preservative in them. It says right on the bottle. I got a flu shot this year, and when I went in, I said, can I get a flu shot without the mercury preservative? And they were like, yeah, sure, we'll just give it to you from the single-shot bottle because that has no preservative, as opposed to the 10-shot bottle or 5-shot bottle, which does have preservative because it, you know, gets room air injected into it when they recycle the thing. But even that is a real – I mean, that's a very, very thin thread to anything. I know Bobby Kennedy wrote a book about the thimerosal, but it's not about vaccines. Bobby Kennedy came out and it was very emphatic to say, everybody should get vaccinated. I vaccinate all my kids. Let's just get the damn – mercury preservative out of the vaccine. Well, cool. But there's something bigger at work here. And that is how these conservative right-wing billionaires have sold the Republican middle class. Right now, among Republicans, the polling for everyone should get a vaccine on Republicans is around 65%. Among Democrats, it's around 86%. Now, what accounts for that 20% difference? 21% difference. Why is it that more Democrats than Republicans think all kids should be vaccinated? Because the Democrats haven't bought the sales pitch that the billionaires have been shoving down our throats for years, that it's all about the rugged individual. Here, let me give you a classic example. This is a physician, a guy by the name of Jack Wolfson. He's a heart attack guy, right? A heart doctor. And they were talking about this kid who has leukemia, whose daughter has leukemia and is very vulnerable to getting measles, and which could kill her. She has no immune system from the radiation treatments to her bone marrow. And he's asking other people's kids who are not vaccinated not to come to school and possibly infect her. And the doctor says, this is from TPM, the doctor said that children should not avoid getting infections such as measles and mumps. These are the rights of our children to get, he told KPNX. On CNN, he said, as far as I'm concerned, it's very likely that her leukemia is from vaccinations in the first place. Right. He says, I'm not going to sacrifice the well-being of my child. My child is pure. Really? This is the absolute logical extension of the insanity that's been peddled now for 50, 60 years by these hard right wingers, mostly since the Powell memo in 1971, that it's your tax money. You should keep it. There's no such thing as society. We don't have to look out for my brother's keeper.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I'm alone. I'm independent. I'm a... something. Conservative? No. Crazy? Yeah. There you go. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And apropos of this, Mike in Cleveland, Georgia. Hey, Mike. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV on Dish Network. Weigh in on the vaccine topic, although I want to take this much larger than that, but go for it.
I don't know if you remember, but there was some years back, a bunch of high decorated military boys dropped out of the system on account of what was being done with their troops. And the vaccinations and all the stuff that you got to take to go overseas and all.
Right.
There's so many of them. And the problem you get into, you mentioned the mercury, but squalene. There's a number of different things that these drug corporations put in there to make money. And although I'm not necessarily against vaccinations, I'm very skeptical of drug companies and the money, the powers that be, putting this stuff into our life.
Well, the stuff,
I think we do have to, at end, personally, if I die of the flu, that's my own affair.
Not if 15 people around you catch it and two of them die too.
Well, that's their choice to be around me, but I don't.
Not if they're your children.
When I was a kid, my mama used to bring folks to the house to give us chicken pox and the measles. That's how we dealt with it.
My mother did the same thing, Mike.
Everybody, and we weren't all dropping dead from exotic diseases. So.
You're right. You're right.
I mean, I don't know what the answer is, but I don't believe a whole lot I'm told by the pharmaceutical industry.
Yeah. Well, here's the problem in the situation, and you're right. When you were a kid, when I was a kid, and we may be the same age, you may be a little older than me, but basically back in the 50s and before, when a kid in the neighborhood got mumps, measles, or chickenpox, there people would throw parties. They would invite other kids over to get infected. And I went to one of those parties. That's how I got measles. And or maybe it was mumps. It was one or the other. It was like 7, 8 years old. I mean, everybody wanted, because that's how we got herd immunity. Everybody got these as children. And by and large, you know, it didn't hurt too many people. Now, it hurted enough people, however, that, and Mike, thanks a lot for the call. Thanks for making it. It hurt enough people that we said, you know, maybe there's a better way here. And the big problem, of course, with these, quote, childhood diseases like measles and mumps is that when adults get them, if pregnant women get rubella, get that form of measles, they're going to have birth defects. Their child is going to have birth defects. And if men or women get the mumps after adolescence, after they become sexually mature, they can become sterile. I mean, there's some really serious side effects to this, to these diseases. So we basically wiped out the herd immunity by vaccinating everybody, and at least the long-term herd immunity from childhood infections, and replaced it with a short-term herd immunity, you know, 5, 10, 20 years, however long the vaccines last. And you could argue that that's something that worked to the benefit of the vaccine manufacturers or whatever, you know, and that it's trying to do what nature did naturally and all that. But it's what we have. And now you've got, you know, two generations of people who did not grow up getting those diseases as children. And vaccines are basically their only shot. So, anyhow, we'll be right back. It's 20 minutes past the hour. Past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Okay, here's the larger frame in which this is occurring. Either we are a society, and the population of this country has more than doubled just in my lifetime. Either we are a society where we all look out for each other, at least in small ways, I mean, that are individually large, societally relatively small. It's not a great deal of money, and the average person pays about $10 a year in taxes that go to support food stamps, for example. So we're all in a small way helping out some people who, for whom this is actually a big deal. So either we are or we're not. We're not a society. We are simply a collection of individuals. And if they can convince us that we're just a collection of individuals, and what's good for everybody, if you don't like it, you don't have to play that game. When it comes to matters of life and death, is, you know, this, the whole conservative philosophy on this is really, really problematic. Here's another example of it. In Ohio, John Kasich, who I think has a very good chance of being the vice presidential nominee this year or next year on the Republican ticket, maybe even the presidential nominee. Who knows? He's a one slick politician. John Kasich has introduced his budget plan for the state of Ohio. Now, what would you predict a Republican who is like, you know, a Koch brothers favorite, right-wing Republican, he got elected and he got a Republican legislature elected with a lot of out-of-state billionaire money in Ohio. The out-of-state billionaires have helped, just like they helped take over Wisconsin, they helped take over Ohio, they helped take over Michigan. In Michigan, it's probably in-state billionaires, the DeVos family and friends. So what kind of a tax plan would he come up with? Well, he's suggesting cutting taxes on wealthy people in Ohio. Basically, anyone with an income over $20,000 a year. I realize, you know, below $20,000 in Ohio, you pretty much don't pay personal income taxes for a family of four. I realize that's not wealthy, but anybody over $20,000. He wants to cut their income taxes, and especially because it's a progressive income tax, the people who are making hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, millions of dollars a year, or even if there's anybody in Ohio making billions of dollars a year, and there's probably a few, or maybe one or two, who knows, they're going to see a massive tax cut. So how's he going to make up that revenue? He's talking about cutting $5.7 billion from his state's budget over the next 2 years. He's going to make up that revenue by raising sales taxes, $5.2 billion. Now, sales taxes are, you know, in fact, here's the article from the Columbus Dispatch, Randy Ludlow writing in the Columbus, Ohio newspaper. He is asking the GOP-controlled General Assembly to cut income taxes by 15% this year and 8% for 2016 for a combined total of $5.7 billion. This atop a 10% cut during Kasich's first term. So he's all about helping rich people keep more of their money. So how's he going to make up for that? Well, he's going to increase income taxes by reducing deductions for retired Ohioans who make more than $100K. He's going to means test income tax credits for Social Security and retirement income. If you get Social Security and retirement income, you may not be able to get tax credits. He's going to require Medicaid recipients who make more than $11,600 a year to pay a monthly premium of $15 to $20 toward their state-provided health care benefits. So anyhow, this article goes up about, you know, John Kasich, this is the Ohio is going to make it, you know, this is going to get the rich get richer and poor people, working people who spend 100% of their income. If you spend 100% of your income, then 100% of your income is going to be taxed. And the tax is going up under John Kasich. So they're going to be the ones who really, really get you know, buried in this stuff. So the article goes up. This is hysterical. The article goes up on the Columbus Dispatch's website. And I would just, you know, I read the article and I thought, okay, this is cool. I got a riff on this. And then I scrolled down and I saw the comments. First comment, I wish I could move out of this state. It will be impossible to get by on what retirement I receive. Between Kasich's tax increases and the local tax increases that will come and the schools that will be looking for fortunes we don't have, Lord help us. Another one, opening the door to charter schools, tapping local schools, levy money. Oh, no. Another one. This is all part of Kasich's plan to shift the burden of taxation from the wealthy to the poor. What a bad human being. Next one. This is these are the actual order that they. This isn't a tax increase for most people. This is a tax. After a year of paying the extra sales tax, whatever you saved in the meager income tax cut would be long gone. Next one. More online purchases. Just make sure it includes free shipping and no sales tax. Don't want Amazon building anything in Ohio. Right. It was, you know, sarcastic. Kasich's proposals, this another one from David. Kasich's proposals would make Ohio's tax structure even more regressive, favoring the richest taxpayers over those with low incomes in the middle class. KW, We are becoming more like Texas, a 9% sales tax state with no income tax. And then Texas gives away $40 million to Toyota to move their headquarters, basically providing corporate welfare to those paid for by those least able to afford it. Texas has a film of prosperity riding on an army of the working poor. Yes, sir, back to the future. Next one from Reader. Sales taxes are regressive. Income taxes are progressive. Nice Benny to the top 1%. That is why our wealth keeps moving out of our hands and into the bank accounts of those at the top. And by the way, they aren't creating jobs with it. John says, aren't Republicans against redistribution of wealth? Oh, not necessarily. It depends on the direction. Next one. I can't imagine a tax policy more calculated to hurt ordinary working Ohioans and the poor. Last one, Laura Deco. What are retirees supposed to do? We spend everything we have coming in, so I guess we'll finance the income tax cuts. Our main entertainment is going to the movies, and Kasich wants to start taxing them. This cretin even wants to make funeral services taxable. I guess we don't deserve to keep our income, but the wealthy do. I wish I could afford to move out of this state.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
Virtually all the Ohioans reading this newspaper article in Ohio are trashing the governor. How does he get reelected? Oh, that's right. Billionaire money. Preparatiously ugly, the good. Croatia. That small European nation is doing something totally radical and progressive to help boost its economy. Starting this week, Croatia canceled the debts of around 60,000 of its poorest residents. Under the plan, which Croatia's parliament approved just last Thursday, the government will wipe out the debt of anyone who has a debt equal to or lower than $5,100 and has a monthly income of less than $138 a month. This isn't just to be nice, either. Croatian government hopes that debt cancellation will stimulate spending and thus jumpstart an economy that is still mired in recession. If only our Congress could be so bold and maybe start with student loans? The bad. Senator John McCain, Senator McGrumpy. Last week, the Arizona senator was caught on camera calling activists who tried to stage a citizen's arrest of former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger, calling those people low-life scum. During an appearance on CNN's Face the Nation Sunday, he defended that choice of words. Check it out.
Of course I was outraged, and I am still outraged. It's one thing to stand up and protest. It's something else to physically threaten an individual, particularly an individual who has served so much to his country, whether you agree or not. As I happen to believe he's one of the great statesmen of my lifetime, or maybe the whole 20th century.
The idea that Kissinger was under any real threat is ridiculous. He was surrounded by security. But as cartoonist Matt Worker pointed out, the real takeaway here is that John McCain supports free speech pretty much everywhere else except the United States Senate. If you're a Syrian rebel or a French cartoonist, he's got your back. But if you're an American who just wants to call out one of the worst war criminals in our history, tough luck. And the very, very ugly Mike Huckabee. During an appearance on CNN's Face the Nation Sunday, the Arkansas governor said that he has no problem with gay people because theirs is just another lifestyle choice like swearing or drinking. Seriously, check it out.
Well, people can be my friends who have lifestyles that are not necessarily my lifestyles. I don't shut people out of my circle or out of my life because they have a different point of view. I don't drink alcohol, but gosh, a lot of my friends, maybe most of them do. You know, I don't use profanity, but believe me, I've got a lot of friends who do.
Being gay is not a choice. It's simply the way that some people are born. And the idea that loving someone of the same gender is a destructive behavior like drinking, that's not just offensive. That's very, very ugly. Amazing. That was State of the Union? CNN's State of the Union show? Okay. As opposed to CBS's Face the Nation. Anyway, welcome back. So, where do we go with this thing? I mean, if we know that we have made a conscious decision over the last 50 years or so to move from everybody being immune to these childhood diseases because they got them as children, to everybody being immune from these childhood diseases. And these diseases are deadly diseases when you're an adolescent or an adult. Mumps will cause sterility. Measles will cause birth defects. I mean, there's bad people can die from them as well, but there's really serious side effects to these quote childhood diseases. And so, I mean, there is a discussion, a rational, thoughtful, logical discussion to be had about whether the best way, you know, what is the best way to guarantee that everybody in the United States has immunity to measles and mumps and rubella? When I was growing up in the 50s, parents, if one of their kids had one of those diseases, they would literally invite all the other kids over. We had, you know, measles parties, mumps parties, chicken pox parties. Because everybody understood that that those diseases you wanted to get when you were young. You don't want to get them when you're older, when they can cause all kinds of damage. And everybody was immune because they'd all gotten them when they were young. And people went, you know, my mom took me it was like a birthday party at this kid's house. I don't remember if he had measles or mumps. It was one of them. And she was like, you know, you're going to get this. And now, I'm not sure we even had a vaccine back then for these diseases. This would have been like in 1955, 56, something like that. But now we do. And you could say, okay, well, you know, we decided to go from parents inoculating their kids basically by getting them sick when they're little. And there are some consequential side effects to that. Some kids ended up deaf. Some kids ended up blind. Some kids ended up dead. I mean, these diseases are, even when children get them, these childhood diseases can be tough. Particularly, you know, pertussis, you know, whooping cough. I mean, that kills kids. And that's not a disease that people went out of their way to have their kids get exposed to. So, you know, you could make the argument that we've made this decision to go from having naturally induced herd immunity to artificially induced herd immunity via the route of vaccines, and that that's very profitable for the pharmaceutical industry and the medical industry. And that, you know, at the theoretical, hypothetical public health level may be reasonably accurate. But it also may be the best thing. I mean, there's a lot fewer side effects to a vaccine. And yeah, two of my three kids had very strong reactions, particularly the MMR vaccine. They got really sick for a couple of days. But they didn't die of whooping cough. They didn't become sterile from getting the mumps when they were 16 years old. They didn't have children with birth defects from getting the measles or rubella when they were pregnant. Well, none of them have been pregnant, but you get my point. This falls into the category of things like seatbelts and safety helmets. There is a point where you say, and frankly, income taxes. There is a point where you say, this is what we do for the public good. This is what we all do for ourselves. So anyhow, pick up some of your calls here. Josie in Rockwell, North Carolina. Hey, Josie, what's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to remind people about pre-vaccination days. First of all, the Europeans invading this hemisphere with their childhood diseases managed to wipe out entire tribes.
That's correct. Flu is the big killer.
And variations of those. Yeah. Also, one of your personal heroes I know, and mine also, Helen Keller, was a victim of childhood measles, blind
oh, really?
And deaf.
It was childhood measles that left her blind and deaf?
Yes, and the things that progressed in her life, part of it was from that tremendous challenge that she had to overcome. But believe me, had her mother had the option of getting her vaccinated, she would have.
Yeah.
We stood in line, you and I did, in the 50s for polio vaccine because we had friends and our parents knew of kids who were in iron lungs.
Yep.
They rejoiced in vaccines.
Yes.
This is a modern phenomenon. And you can blame the pharmaceutical companies for not cleaning up their act quick enough, but they're not making money off vaccines. That's why there's no new vaccines. That's why there's no Ebola.
Yeah.
It simply is not profitable. The anti, oh, the male enhancement drugs do much better.
Yeah, making Viagra will make you money. Making vaccines, you basically have to get government subsidies to make money. And you're right, Josie. And excellent points all. Thank you very much. I do appreciate it. Good to hear from you. Diana in Poinette, Wisconsin. Hey, Diana.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
When I was a young gal, we had the polio vaccination going on all over the United States.
Yeah, I remember that. We had the sugar cubes. That was the one of the vaccines. And then the next year we got a shot. That was the other one. It was like Salk versus versus somebody else, the two different competing, the live versus the – I had both.
Right. And can you imagine if our government, the people, the officials in our government and the, you know, rich people who are trying to run the show now were available then, okay, and just corrupted everything, you know, as they are doing now, and we didn't get vaccinated. We'd be in wheelchairs, and then they'd want to cut our benefits because we would be under Social Security disability. I mean, what kind of country would we be then? I mean, yeah.
Well, we would be a libertarian paradise, Diana. We would be like Somalia.
Oh, my God, they don't make sense.
Yeah, well, you know, logic in support of tax cuts for billionaires doesn't have to make sense. Logic in support of deregulation of banksters and oil refineries and, you know, Koch Brothers Industries doesn't have to make sense. It makes them money. And so they can sell it to the gullible Fox News viewers and the gullible hate radio listeners and, you know, get their taxes cut and make more money. I mean, the Koch brothers' net wealth increased by billions of dollars last year. It's they're doing just fine, thank you. And this philosophy now is infecting everything, and it's infecting our body politic, and it's frankly risking. And Diana, thank you for the call. Thank you for your contribution. This is destructive stuff. And Rand Paul and, you know, just ignore this, ignore the clown show. Mike Huckabee is never going to be president. The only reason that these guys are out there, these fringe Republican candidates, and being taken so seriously by our media, is because they're saying things corporate America likes, generally. This might not be
one. You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And the reason they're doing that, even though they know that, you know, Newt Gingrich knew he was never going to be president, is because they've got giant egos and they want the money. You can keep some of that money. Welcome back. 15 minutes before the hour. And Wayne in Chicago. Hey, Wayne, thanks for listening. You're listening to WCPT. Let me pick you up when you're on a commercial break right now. Let me pick you up when you're back on the air. Bill in Louisville, Kentucky. Hey, Bill, you wanted to talk about John McCain. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
Yeah, thank you, Tom. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thank you.
We'll be brief. I was watching the McCain, John McCain, when he talked about the low-life scum.
Right.
That interrupted his presentation. I know this isn't on topic, but if you look at that and watch him real close, there's a, I don't know if you call it extraterrestrial or exactly what you would call it. They're called reptilians. And if you watch him while he's doing his whole rant, he's constantly sticking his tongue out like a reptile. It's just something I wanted to point out to you, Tom. Thank you for all your input.
Okay, thank you, Bill. That's a good one. Are you a David Icke's fan, Bill?
I'm not sure who David Icke is.
David Icke's is the British. I'm not sure what his official title is, but he's Ikes is his last name. And I attended a speech that he was giving in Los Angeles. I was actually speaking at the same conference. It was one of these kind of new age conferences, and I was speaking, I think, about ADHD or maybe about Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight. And he was there, and Louise and I went to listen to his talk. It was a two-hour presentation. And we sat down, and for the first hour, he was going through the formation of the country and the Masons and Masonic symbology and how Christianity had appropriated ancient pagan stuff and, you know, the meaning of the Yule log and the Christmas tree, all this stuff, a lot of which I already knew. And, you know, people in the room were just fascinated by it. And he's going on and he's going through and he's getting more and more contemporary. And then finally, in the second hour, he makes this segue into talking about how Bill Clinton was president at the time, how Bill Clinton, this was back in the 90s, how Bill Clinton zips on his human suit every morning, that he's actually a lizard. He's one of the lizard people who live underground, and they control the world, these lizard people. And what was astonishing to me was that at that point, I mean, he had, you know, A equals B, B equals C, C equals D. Now here's D equals E, you know. And at that point, I'm looking around the room and everybody's like taking notes and nodding and being very serious. And I'm like, wait a minute, this guy just jumped the shark. But that's David Icke's. He's the lizard guy.
Okay.
Yeah. So,
all right.
So, Bill, you think John McCain may be zipping on his human suit every morning?
If you have that tape, you play it back, and because I was watching it, and I was like, wow, that's a reptilian, the way he's doing his tongue, constantly sticking his tongue out.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Take a look at it. Go from there, Tom.
Next time I'm on somebody else's.
All your work and everything.
Yeah, okay. Thanks a lot, Bill. Great to hear from you. Next time I'm on somebody else's TV show, I'm going to have to do that. Just see if it makes it up. See how many people. Oh, Harvin's a lizard person. Oh, at least I'm not a pigeon. What can I say? You know? What can I say? How are we doing on time? Oh, we got 2 seconds. All right. We're going to hit the break here, and then we'll come back on the other side of the break, and I'll be picking up more of your calls. It's 10 minutes before the hour here on the Tom Hartman Program on Free Speech TV and other stickers. Chicago. Hey, Wayne, what's on your mind today?
Hey, how you doing, Tom? I just want to comment about the clip that you played with Rand Paul. I understand everything else you were saying about him, which is true, but what he said about those vaccines is true also. I'll give you an example. A senior CDC scientist confessed that the CDC covered up evidence that the MMR vaccine, which is measles, mumps, and rubella, increases the autism risk. Also, Tom, you have...
Wayne, I think you're reading right-wing conspiracy websites.
No, I don't think so. I think this is the truth. Here's another
Who's
thing.
The official, and when did he say that, and what were the circumstances?
Okay, you have to go to naturalnews.com to find out where this came from. But anyway, here's another thing, Tom. Are you still there?
I am. So are you.
Okay, here's another thing. Two Merck scientists, they were virologists. They filed a False Claim Act complaint against Merck in 2010, but it wasn't unsealed until 2012. Merck knowingly falsified his mumps vaccine. It spiked the blood with animal antibodies to make it look like the vaccine would boost the immune system. Here's another thing. GlaxoSmithKline's flu vaccine right now is 25,000 times what the EPA allows in mercury in water.
No, Wayne, I had the flu vaccine this year, and there was absolutely no mercury in it whatsoever.
Well, that's because you asked for the one without mercury.
Right.
There shouldn't be one on the market with mercury in it, period, Tom.
Yeah. Well, maybe there is. I think the multi-dose ones do have that, the Marisol in it. And I don't disagree with that, Wayne. I'm with you, and I'm with Bobby Kennedy on let's get poison out of our vaccines. But this whole issue of MMR and all these other things. And I think that MMR should be broken into 3 vaccines and spread out over a period of a couple of weeks. You know, I'm fine with that. I think, you know, there might be something to be said for not insulting a child's immune system with multiple vaccines on the same day, although it's more convenient for doctors and for parents. But on the other hand, if it increases compliance and decreases the risk that other, you know, that, you know, kids getting radiation for leukemia are going to end up with measles, or other kids are going to end up like blind like Helen Keller from childhood measles, then I think it's a good thing. So, you know, I respectfully disagree, Wayne. But by the way, Shano just checked out the website that you just quoted, Wayne. Can you put your mic on the air, Shano, because you see you can say that on the air? Here he is.
Essentially, it's founded by a guy named Michael Allen, also known as Mike Adams, and he's a self-described health ranger. He's an AIDS denialist, a 9/11 truther, and a birther, and he endorses conspiracy theories surrounding Sandy Hook.
Right. So he thinks that Sandy Hook was a government conspiracy to get guns banned. He thinks that Barack Obama was born outside the United States and is not a natural-born citizen. He thinks that 9/11 was an inside job by the CIA. This is your source of information, Wayne. You need to take it with a grain of salt.
Okay. All right. You can go with all of those. But isn't he a doctor also?
He's got two different names. Apparently, it's some writer using a pseudonym.
Okay. So Mike Adams is not the
selling,
man. That's a
right. And he's selling supplements. His website is there to make money for him. So, you know, be careful. Just because something's on the internet, Wayne, doesn't mean that's true.
Yeah, I know that's right. But what about the MERS scientists who filed a false claim act?
Well, it may well be. It wouldn't surprise me at all. But you know, what's it a false claim for? And are these disgruntled employees, or is there some there? When you're talking about a drug that is given to pretty much everybody, you know, these vaccines, they're given to poor kids, rich kids. It's not like, you know, if there was some sort of real serious problem here, I would guess that you would discover that there was a special vaccine that rich people could buy for a higher price and that they would be giving that one to their kids. But they're not. They're using the exact same vaccines. And I mean, they may go a step further and say, hey, I want the single dose version that doesn't have thimerosal. I'll give you that. In fact, that's what I did. I said I'll pay extra for it. I can afford it.
What about the flu vaccine having 25,000 times more mercury than the EPA allows in water? What about that?
Not a good thing, Wayne. It's not a good thing. I would not give any vaccine that has thimerosal in it to me or anybody else just because it's mercury. But that's got nothing to do with vaccines. That's got to do with preservatives in shots, not just vaccines, but all kinds of shots. And this is
flu vaccine also. Just because he's who he is doesn't mean he's not telling the truth, Tom.
Well, it doesn't mean that he is telling the truth, though, either, Wayne. Wayne, I want to let some other folks in here, but you know, thank you for your call and your contribution. I always listen carefully to what you have to say and appreciate it. Thank you, George in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, George, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how are you?
Good.
A quick search on that vaccine story the previous caller was talking about. It's actually been pretty thoroughly debunked. excuse me. That report comes from a previous paper that actually showed no correlation, but somebody with an axe to grind sort of took a pass at it with the bad sampling method.
Yeah.
But anyway, the reason I called is I guess I could appreciate the sort of rugged individualist, me first, society last mentality that many conservatives have, if they would at least apply it more consistently. Because if you say things to them, well, then of course you're for the legalization of drugs or the legalization of prostitution, or you're okay with gay marriage, one of the first things that will come out of their mouths is, no, I'm not for those things because it's bad for society as a whole.
Right. Or they would just say, I'm not for those things because they don't personally like them, you know, and it's like, I guess that's the way of flipping that upside down and turning it into a conservative argument. But you know, we as a society make decisions about what is and what isn't. I mean, it's, So basically what you're saying is if conservatives want to take if they want to be libertarian about vaccines, let them be libertarian about everything else. Now, some true libertarians actually are, George. That's the problem. But thanks for the call. Excellent point. But there are libertarians out there who will say, yeah, you know, I'm in favor, as George was saying. Decriminalize prostitution, you know, get religion out of our schools, you know, split, you know, let all these things. But that doesn't mean that their vaccine position makes any sense at all. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And earlier this, well, actually it was last week, last Friday, on my TV show, I had a fellow on by the name of Dr. Daryl Wing Sue. He wrote a book. He's most famous for an earlier book he wrote about microaggressions. He introduced that phrase into the lexicon of these small actions that people take that cause other people to feel injured. And his new book is called Race Talk and the Conspiracy of Silence, Understanding and Facilitating Difficult Dialogues on Race. And it was fascinating because he said, you know, one of the most difficult things that people of different races can do is engage in an honest and candid conversation about race. And I wanted to pursue that line a little farther with a guy that I think is one of the smartest minds and most trenchant observers of this entire issue, Joe Madison, host of The Joe Madison Show, airing weekdays 6 to 10 a.m. on Sirius Channel 126, his website, joemadison.net. Hey, Joe, welcome back.
Well, thank you, Tom. Appreciate it.
We have talked with each other over the years on the air and off about issues that have to do with race, you know, this particular, you know, the shooting in Ferguson, those kind of things. But I'm not sure that we've ever had a conversation just about our understanding of race. And I'm curious your thoughts on how people can initiate those kind of conversations and where we go with this. And I also want to this is Black History Month, but I really want to start doing this throughout the year, is informing our probably majority white audience about things from African American history that they may not know. So,
that's where you start. James Baldwin. I'm reading a fascinating book by James. Not by James Baldwin, but titled James Baldwin: The Last Conversations. Mm-hmm. And it's a book where he, at the time he was dying, and his brother had invited in some really significant, well thought journalists. Studs Terkel and others that probably you would have heard of. Mm-hmm. And they had a very candid, almost deathbed conversation with James Baldwin. And for those people who don't know who James Baldwin is, we don't have really enough time, but it speaks to the issue you're bringing up. He was one of the great writers, right there with Langston Hughes and Ralph Ellison and others. And one of the things in the conversation he had, he said, you know, race, he said, white is not a color. It's an attitude. And then I think it was Studs Terkel said, well, if white's not a color and it's an attitude, then what is black? And he said, black is a situation. It's a circumstance. It's a condition. That's what he said. It's a condition. Black is a condition. White is an attitude. And it was interesting because I'm out here in Los Angeles. Dick Gregory is getting his star got his star yesterday on a Walk of Fame, finally.
Yeah.
And he brought that up, too. He mentioned, he said, look, guys, white is an attitude. And not all white people have the same attitude. Now, James Baldwin also said, if you are not aware of what happened behind you, James Baldwin said, then you don't understand what's going on around you. Mm. And that's very profound because you said it, you know, February is Black History Month, but thank God you also said, but we're going to do this all year round because we need to understand that our history is everybody's history. And it goes back to something what someone else said. You know, this whole thing that one race is superior to another race and we end up competing against each other about who has the superior race. When in reality, isn't it about civilizations? It's civilizations that rise and fall.
Right.
Not so much race, it's civilizations. Roman civilization rises, Roman civilization falls. Greek civilization rises, an African civilization rises, an Asian civilization rises, a European civilization rises, and they fall. They rise and fall. And usually you find in these civilizations a mixture of all races. That's why we don't have an honest conversation, and you set it up in your introduction, because we're not honest about our history.
Hmm. What is the part of the Black experience in America or the Black African American history that you think white people are probably most malinformed or misinformed about, and they should understand?
All of it.
All of it.
All of it.
I'm sure you're right.
I mean, all of it. I mean, you know, Dick Gregory was funny yesterday. He, as he is always, but you know, he says, you know, it's amazing. Everybody ought to go see Selma, and all this hell that's being raised about the way Johnson was portrayed. All this hell you're raising about the way Johnson was portrayed. Hell, look at Cleopatra. We all know Cleopatra was a dark-skinned woman. Yes, she might have had some Greek blood in her at that time because of the Greek civilization that had invaded Egypt. But the reality is, and Dick Gregory said it, she didn't look like Elizabeth Taylor.
Right.
And we Black people didn't say anything. We just went to the movies and enjoyed the movie Cleopatra.
Yeah.
It's all of it. I mean, it is all of it. It really, honestly is. And then, as you know, history is always written by the victor. I mean, that's just the nature. That's just the way civilizations work. I just think it really is all of it. There's no question about it. People went to see Selma, and I had to explain to my audience the opening scene did not happen in Selma, Alabama. Mm-hmm. The opening scene of Selma happened in Birmingham,
mm-hmm,
at the 16th Street Baptist Church. That was the bombing of the 16th Street Baptist Church. The vast majority of people who went to see that movie, Black and white, didn't realize that.
Yeah.
They thought it was Selma. And then once again, it's how we look at history. I'm putting a speech together for my Black History Month lectures, and I'm talking about how Martin Luther King Jr., from the Montgomery bus boycott to 1965, the Voting Rights Act, is pretty much taught in schools. But between 65 and 68, when Martin Luther King Jr. decided to branch out into human rights, he talked about the three evils of our civilization. He called it poverty, racism, and militarism. Martin Luther King, that is not taught in our schools. And it's almost as if he didn't do anything between the end of 65 or the Voting Rights Act, the signing of the Voting Rights Act, until his assassination.
It's because he was taking on the establishment.
He was taking on the establishment. That's absolutely right.
Yeah.
So it's all of it.
Yeah.
And,
well,
and you have to really dig deep.
We will continue these conversations as the year continues, Joe, if that's okay with you. Thanks so much for dropping by today, Joe.
Not only okay, it's a necessity.
You got it. We'll do it again. Hang on.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Joe Madison, the Black Eagle, airing weekdays 6 to 10 a.m. Sirius Channel 126, joemadison.net, the website. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you, Tom.
Welcome back. 15 minutes past the hour. Edmund, watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Network in Hot Springs National Park. I don't know what state that's in, Edmund. Where is that, Arizona? No, that would be Arkansas? Edmund, you're on the air. Edmund is not listening to his telephone. Okay, let's try Annie in Boise, Idaho, watching Free Speech TV on cable. Hey, Annie, you're on the air.
Hello, Dr. Hartman. Thank you for taking my call. Per a previous caller, I just wanted to catch you up to date on the CDC whistleblower story. Dr. William Thompson is, I believe, the gentleman that he was trying to think of. Mm-hmm. He has just, as of February 1st, been granted official whistleblower status. And so this paves the way for him to testify before Congress. What Dr. Thompson did was he called Dr. Brian Hooker, and his phone conversation was recorded, and he basically admitted that he buried data confirming a link between the MMR vaccine and autism.
Hmm.
And it hasn't been debunked. I mean, we're still waiting to hear. And it's something that's not covered in the media. Nobody's heard of Dr. William Thompson or Dr. Hooker. There was a blip of it. Lisa Joyce Goes on the Ronan Farrow show was able to mention it. But, you know, I am a mother whose oldest child had a vaccine reaction. And that experience informed the non-vaccine status of my second two children.
But was that reaction autism, Annie? I mean, my kids got sick from the vaccines, too. I got a whole bunch of shots when last time I went to Africa. One of them turned my left arm black, basically, the whole backside of it, you know, pooled blood or whatever it was. I don't know. It was all black and blue for a week and a half. That doesn't, you know, that's still not as bad as getting whatever it was. Yellow fever, I think, was the shot that got me on that one.
No, my son's reaction were stimming and a food allergy, which are two symptoms that are very, very common among most autistic children. You hear parent after parent saying, my baby at this age started a weird stimming behavior that I had never seen in another baby. And at that same time, we introduced solid foods and we discovered that he was allergic to dairy. And no, my child is not autistic. And I sincerely believe that the reason he is not autistic is because I protected him from autism by not vaccinating him, by not continuing to inject him with things that could neurologically damage him.
What about we had the woman on, the scientist the other day, who was suggesting the glyphosate Roundup, this herbicide, is a systemic neurotoxin that attacks the gut flora, our gut flora, and makes us more vulnerable to things like, actually, in her opinion, causes things like celiac disease. I mean, it could be that your child was introduced to solid foods about the same time your child was taking the vaccines, and it's the glyphosate or some other thing in our food supply that's causing the problem, GMO products.
Absolutely. There is mercury in the air. There's mercury in the water. There's mercury everywhere and aluminum everywhere and all kinds of toxins everywhere. But your child is never going to be more intensely exposed to those toxins than by having them injected directly into her bloodstream. And I take issue with this whole meme that it's all of these crazy right-wing kooks who are not looking out for the greater
good. You say Dr. William Thompson?
Yes, Dr. William Thompson.
Okay, this has been debunked.
Scientist at the CDC.
This has been debunked.
How so?
No, go to Snopes.com, and you can read it. It's listed as false. I haven't read the whole thing here, I'll have to read it and report back to you. But it has been debunked pretty thoroughly, actually. The editor and publisher regretfully retract the article, as there were undeclared competing interests on the part of the author, which compromised the peer review process. I mean, this is they're dancing as fast as they can. Annie, thank you for the call. Welcome back, Tom. Hartman here with you. For a thorough analysis of the flaws and misinformation associated with the current CDC autism cover-up conspiracy, we recommend the posts on the subject at Science Blog, which note that the claim at the heart of this matter allegedly suppressed proof of a 340% increase of autism in African-American boys after MMR vaccination, that there is no biologically plausible reason why there would be an effect observed in African-Americans but no other race, and more specifically than that, African-American males. You know, so Snopes has debunked this. Snopes.com, the headline, it's called Bad Medicine. Fraud at the CDC uncovered 340% increase risk of autism hidden from public. No, it's not true. So, anyway, Edmund in Hot Springs National Park. Hey, Edmund, what's up?
Good morning, Tom. I was wondering where these people come from, these people who object about the vaccination. There's an old Persian proverb says that uninformed people and are people who don't know that they don't know. So these people are basically unaware of that, and we are, for last 50 or maybe 100 years, we are eating, drinking, and breathing poison, and yet they object about minute amount of preservatives, which I agree with you that it's not safe. But regardless, that I can give you an analogy of these people. Like if you are soaked in a bathtub of sulfuric acid, and then you object a drop of vinegar and claim that vinegar is burning you.
Yeah.
Thank you, and have a good day.
Okay, thank you, Edmund. Yeah, well said. It's sort of, you know, it's like people who complain about wearing seatbelts but then smoke, you know, for example. I'm trying to compare harms. Cleve in Clayton, Georgia. You wanted to talk about vaccines and Rand Paul?
Hey, Tom. Happy New Year to you and your family.
And back at you, Cleve.
It's amazing. I just sat on hold for an hour and 25 minutes to talk to you. I disagree with you about 65% of the time, but I find myself watching your show for 3 hours every day.
Well, thank you.
But actually, what I wanted to make a comment about, I changed when after I heard you talking to the gentleman that was on a few minutes ago.
Joe Madison.
Juan Williams looked like. Talk about racism, and I believe that racism is totally taught to people. I grew up in Sandy Springs. You're familiar with that area because, you know, you lived in Atlanta and all.
Sandy Springs, Georgia?
And I never went to school with any black kids until I got to college.
Right.
And that was pretty much the first time I ever had really contact with them, other than the caddies at the club who were like my big brothers. And I remember sitting there in class the first day, and several black girls were sitting around me, and I was talking to them, and I would say, colored people. And they looked at me, and they said, what color were they? But, you know, I said, well, what am I supposed to call you? And they say, call us black people.
Yeah.
But anyway, that was just my experience. And I think it's truly something that people are taught, and it's something that we can learn to help.
Well, and this is,
be that way.
This is one of the things about being white, Cleve, that really is probably the most important part of white privilege, is that white people can go through their whole entire lives without ever thinking about race. And most white people, in fact, go through most of their lives without having to seriously consider race or having to contemplate its consequences or effects. Black people don't have that privilege. They're confronted by their race every single day, and thus must, you know. And by the way, the same is true of gender. Women are far more vigilant and alert to societal signals and cues. More because they're more likely to be oppressed or harmed by men. And so, you know, white men are sort of at the top of the predation tree, the top predators in the system. And, you know, women and African Americans and you know, and African American women. And as you kind of go down that tree of, or go up the tree of oppression, as it were. And, you know, as white men, Cleve, you and I have been amazingly privileged throughout our lives without even realizing it. And the without even realizing it part is the real, that's where the real danger is for us, frankly. And it's, you know, one of the problems for everybody else. So.
Well, it's great that there's somebody out there like you that's bringing this to people's attention and getting people to talk about it, because you're right. I never thought about it. So like I said, was gotten older and I started dating, and I dated a couple black girls, and I was in the golf business as a manufacturer's rep, and you can understand what a conflict that would have been for me to be dating a black girl, the position I was in and all, and we talked about it, and you know, we decided it'd be better for both of us if we just went our separate ways, because I wasn't willing to go through the turmoil that that would have caused in my life, and I didn't want to put them through it either.
Right. And isn't it sad that that's the state of our society right now? But you're right. Cleve, thank you for the call. Very, very thoughtful. Thank you for your analysis and insight. Alan, in Phoenix, Arizona, listening on AM 1480. What's up, Alan?
Hello, Tom. I just want to continue with the Republican plan for budgeting. And you don't see anybody blinking an eye when they talk about spending tens of billions, if not hundreds of billions of dollars, to fight ISIS and to fight Al-Qaeda. And yet you hear the constant complaining about the money that we're spending for Obamacare.
Right.
The way I see it, Tom, if somebody died, the 8 to 10 million people in Obamacare, if they die at the hands of ISIS or Al-Qaeda, or if they die because they don't get health care, it's the same result. They're still dead.
Right.
So I don't understand somebody like Vice President Cheney getting on Meet the Press, and he says, well, I'll do anything to save American lives. Who's American lives? I don't understand who he wants to save. Certainly not the people on Obamacare. And I've heard so many of these promises that the Republicans make that never come to fruition. I just come to the conclusion they have their own version of the emperor's new clothes.
Well, they do. I mean, what you have to understand is that the Republican Party is the wholly owned subsidiary of corporate and billionaire America. And that's why they all deny climate. You know, the Koch brothers have actually gotten a lot of the politicians here in Washington, D.C. to sign their version of Grover Norquist's pledge, where they pledge that they will not do basically anything to clean up carbon in the atmosphere, or they will not acknowledge global warming or whatever, some variation on that. And it's just, this is like, this is, you know, a democratic republic, really? Alan, thank you for the call, and thanks for listening to us there in Phoenix. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
But here's the point. This whole vaccine thing is meta to a much larger issue about are we a society or not? Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Tom Tillis was the Speaker of the House, as I recall, in North Carolina. One of the protégés, apparently, of not McCrory, he's the governor. Who's the billionaire who basically runs North Carolina? Art Pope, that's right. Art Pope, you know, basically bought that state, and Tom and McCrory put him in charge, you know, of a chunk of the government, actually. So Tom Tillis comes out and says, the United States is one of the most regulated nations in the history of the planet. Right. Excuse me, I'm sneezing here. He says, I've had a discussion with someone, and we were at a Starbucks in my district, and we were talking about certain regulations where I felt like maybe you should allow businesses to opt out. And the opt-out part he was talking about was requiring employees to wash their hands after using the restroom. Right. And the solution is disclosure, right? This is what the Supreme Court said with Citizens United. In the Citizens United case, it says, yeah, what we're doing here might open the door to billionaires buying politicians and corrupting our political process. The solution is for Congress to pass a law that says that when billionaires make their donations, they have to be immediately disclosed. In other words, the solution is transparency. Republicans, of course, have fought every legislative attempt to ensure that transparency put forward by Democrats. And basically, Tom Tillis is making this transparency argument. Right? Here he is. Listen to this.
Don't you believe that this regulation that requires this gentleman to wash his hands before he serves your food is important, should be on the books? As a matter of fact, I think it's one that I can illustrate the point. I said, I don't have any problem with Starbucks if they choose to opt out of this policy, as long as they post a sign that says, we don't require our employees to wash their hands after leaving the restroom. The market will take care of that.
Right. What he's missing is that by requiring them to post the sign, you just regulated them. Right? Oh, yeah, we're going to deregulate them. They no longer have to have a sign in the bathroom that says employees must wash their hands. Now they have to have a sign in the front of the restaurant that says our employees might not wash their hands. They're both government regulations. This is insane. And do you, I mean, which, by the way, takes us to the issue of paid sick leave. I mean, do you really want a guy who's you know, sick and sneezing bringing your food out of the kitchen or making your food in the kitchen? Well, that's what you get in Republican world. Maybe we should just slightly regulate them, make them put a sign out in front. Or maybe the marketplace, the magical marketplace, the confidence fairy. Maybe the marketplace will simply cause them to start putting up signs saying, we don't offer paid sick leave to our employees. They may sneeze on your food. You think? This is nuts. Anyhow, Jesse in Miami, Florida. Hey, Jesse, what's up?
Hey, hi, Tom. Hey, the Republicans, I think, you know, that old saying about when the natives get restless, start a war, what the rich will do.
Right.
I think they use measles now and Ebola or anything else to distract us from the true, you know, solution to their rule.
Well, that's interesting. It's the new be afraid meme. Yeah, that's a very interesting one. The problem is that it's problematic for Fox News because they've got their guys like, you know, Rand Paul going out and saying, oh, yeah, these vaccines, they cause autism. In fact, there's, you know, no solid evidence of that. Jesse, thank you for the call. In fact, one of the things that Shano has been digging into this, one of the things we found is that this one guy who's constantly quoted by everybody, as the guy who told the truth, right? Dr. William Thompson, a senior researcher at the CDC, one-time senior researcher. He actually published in 2004 a piece saying, oops, I shouldn't have said that. He published it last year, excuse me, in 2014, saying back in 2004, I made a horrible mistake. You know, using bad methodology and bad research, and people have taken this and run with it, and it's just wrong. Helen in Ithaca, New York, listening on AM 1470. Hey, Helen, you wanted to talk about Black history?
Yes, I did, but that was funny, kind of your rant on the deregulation. That was pretty funny. But sad but funny.
Yeah,
I was just thinking maybe there's some synergy going on now with this movie Selma that came out. Mm-hmm. And what provoked me to call was your last guest, Joseph.
Joe Madison.
Morgan? Madison, okay, Madison.
Yeah, Joe Madison.
Okay, he was on. And then, and this is Black History Month, so I'm thinking synergy. We got stuff going on here. That bridge from Selma to Montgomery is still named after the head of the Ku Klux Klan.
Right, Edmund Pettus.
It's time to change the name of that bridge. And I am Caucasian, but I'll get behind it.
Well, in a way, you know, having that bridge named after the head of the KKK is sort of a reminder to all of us. I mean, that bridge is where one of the most brutal events that was viewed by 70 million Americans on live television ever happened. You know, obviously a lot of brutality is a whole lot worse than what happened on the Edmund Pettus Bridge has happened in the history of Black people in this country. But that keeping it named after him, because history says it was on the Pettus Bridge that this happened. I get your point. But sometimes scrubbing the names of the racists and, you know, the bad guys out of history, may not be the best thing, because we want to remember the horrors that they foisted upon people. Am I making sense?
Name it Lewis Bridge.
Yeah. John Lewis, the John Lewis Edmund Pettus Bridge, right?
Yeah.
And name one half after John Lewis, the other half after Edmund Pettus. That's, you know, I get your point. I think it's got, you know, it's solid. There actually is a discussion about that. I don't think it's going to change anything, but it's it's an incredible movie, Selma. If you haven't seen the movie Selma, you got to go see it. Helen, thank you for the call. That was great. Corky in Rochester. Excuse me, sneezing again.
Yeah,
what's up, Corky?
Glad you hit on that point that this is like a false flag operation here with these measles vaccines.
Right.
Now they're going to start, you watch, mark my words, in the Congress and the Senate, they're going to start coming out with these bills, uh, this, say you don't have to get your kid vaccinated, and it's going to be a freedom thing, and they're going to keep us busy all the way to the 16th election.
Yeah, and by the way, if you're concerned about mercury, here's a headline in scienceworldreport.com, today's issue. This is February 3rd. Mercury levels in yellowfin tuna are rising at a staggering 3.8% per year. It says you may want to rethink ordering that tuna. Scientists have found that mercury concentrations in Hawaii.
Don't forget all the radiation in the fish out of Japan.
Yeah. Well, and then the tuna migrate from Japan to here and back, and as do a lot of other fish. So, yeah, this is a big deal. But, you know, people are not, it seems, so concerned about Fukushima radiation or mercury in their fish, mercury from the Chinese burning our coal, which we're shipping over there like there's no tomorrow. Not so concerned about that. They are concerned. They are hysterical about a vaccine that could literally not just save their child's life, but save the lives of other people around them. This is about creating a safe country. Corky, thank you for the call. Carl in Nashville, Tennessee. Hey, Carl.
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Great. You wanted to get in on the conversation with Joe about issues that...
I do. Great, great conversation. And I'm going to tell you this right here. The one of the best questions I've ever heard you ask one of your guests was, what do you think white people get wrong about history of black people? And the best answer I've ever heard to your show was everything.
Right.
Because we are in America, for some reason, it seems like our history of black people begins and ends with slavery.
Yep.
And it seems like that is the most part. I'm going to give you a perfect example of this. I had a guy, I've never told you the type of business that I do, but I had a guy that I was doing some business with, and I looked over his shoulder and had a calendar with Jesus Christ on it. Mm-hmm. And I said, who is that? You know, it's the picture of the
sure.
Okay,
Jesus, the white guy, yeah.
Said, yeah, the white guy, right. So I said, who is that right there? He says Jesus. And I looked at him and I said it's weird. I said it's weird because Jesus wasn't born in Europe. And he looked at me kind of funny. Then I said, have you ever seen the movie Moses? He said, yeah, yeah, yeah. I said, do you really think that Ramses looked like Euro Brenner,
right.
And that Moses looked like Charles Destin.
Right.
And he looked at me with this befuddled look like, what do you mean? That's what they look like, because this is what we were told these people look like. And I said, what continent? And these are intelligent people. I said, what continent Egypt is on?
Yeah.
Oh, Africa. You know, and
the penny drops, people, right?
If Moses spent 40 years living under Pharaoh's family, he had to look like the family. So what makes you think he looked like Charleston Heston?
Right.
And it's just this look that you get like. And the thing about it, the people, they know the history. It's just that they it's almost like they've been brainwashed to rewrite history in their mind. And, you know, and that was just a hell of an answer, everything. Because, like I said, I'm ending with this. Is that the history of black people on this planet, to most Americans, began and end with slavery and Martin Luther King. That's about all they know about us.
Right. You're absolutely right, Carl. And I intend over the course of the next year to dig a whole hell of a lot deeper than that. Thank you for the call, and thank you for your comments. We'll be back. And, yeah, Jesus was definitely a man of color. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Tell your Christian friends. Stick around. We'll be right back. And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Sue in Morgan, Pennsylvania, you wanted to talk about MMR vaccines? Thanks for watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Network, by the way, Sue.
Thank you, Tom, and I can't believe I'm disagreeing with you 2 weeks in a row. That's not my way. I think you're one of the most amazing and intelligent people on the planet.
But
I had reactions to the polio vaccination, and I've never recovered. I'm 66. Mm-hmm. Why can't we wear a mask? I had mumps. We all had mumps. We all had measles.
why can't we wear a mask and use clean procedures instead of having something that we're not sure whether the science is accurate or inaccurate and having something put on our body that we can't remove?
So we are sure that the science is accurate. Vaccines actually do work. We pretty much eliminated polio purely through the use of vaccines. We pretty much eliminated smallpox purely through the use of vaccines.
Tom, you reported about the governor in Idaho stopping vaccinations for polio because so many people were getting polio from the vaccinations. Do you remember reporting that?
Yeah, there's two kinds of polio vaccine, the live vaccine and the dead vaccine. And yes, if children If babies take the live vaccine, it comes out in their poop, it gets in their diapers, and if adults handle those diapers and get that poop on their hands, they can infect themselves with the live vaccine and they can actually get a mild case of polio. It's rare, it's very rare. And by and large, I think the killed vaccine is the vaccine of preference. You know, that goes back
but
to the vaccine.
The body is ours, and we only have one for a lifetime.
Right.
Only one. And a mask and cleanliness, if that's required, go for it. There are no side effects.
Yeah, there are. The side effect is getting an illness that's going to kill you.
You have a mask on. How are you going to give it?
Viruses are typically less than 3 microns, 3/10 of a micron in diameter. And
I agree.
And the best masks you can get will not filter anything smaller than a half a micron, 0.5. So if a lot of viruses travel right through, you know, even the really good high end masks. You've got to have a closed respiratory system. You know, you've got to be walking around in a moon suit like they do around people with Ebola if you want to keep all viruses off you. And I don't think most people want to live that way.
Well, I don't want to live being forced to put something inside my body. I've never had a flu vaccine, never will.
Yeah. Well, I didn't have flu shots for more than 30 years. I was concerned about the mercury that was in the shots and half the time they don't get the right virus and whatnot. But now that they've got mercury-free shots, I've been getting my flu vaccines. Even though, you know, it may not be the most effective thing, it's a step. Sue, I guess we're going to respectfully disagree with each other today. Thank you for your kind words, though, and thanks for the call. We'll be back. It's 10 minutes before the end. Helping you win the water cooler wars, Tom Hartman here with you, and let's check in with the Talk Radio News Service. Talk Radio News brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com and free-don.org. Bob Ney on the line with us from the Talk Radio News Service, the author of Sideswiped. Congressman, welcome back.
Good morning, Tom. How are you?
I am great, but I'll get better. How about you?
I'm going to try.
Okay. So what's going on in the world?
Staying on the vaccine theme, because you know there's a few issues to talk about today with the budget, but the president had a, because this drew some attention, some people thought the president was saying something about not vaccinating. That's not correct. The president's budget cut has $50 million from the National Vaccine Program, but that $50 million cut is made up by the Affordable Care Act itself. So it's a reduction in the president's 2016.
So he's proposing to reduce redundant, thus wasteful spending. You'd think the Republicans would be down with that, but they're criticizing him for it? Really?
No, they aren't, but some of the people have started this, you know, the Facebook myth.
Right.
The president, you know, is cutting vaccine. Well, the president's actually supplanted that cut anyway, previous through the Affordable Care Act, and that's how the vaccines will be taken out. And that's one small, you know, portion of the budget. But the budget rage is debating. Look, almost every president's budget, even when they control the entire government, is considered dead on arrival for many, many parts of it. Now, with this president's budget, it's very interesting, Tom, because although the Republicans are calling it laughable and he's, you know, using that veto pen because it's full of red ink, et cetera, the actual truth is the sequestration mentioned by the president to eliminate it in this budget is going to have some receptivity for the very people that, that also voted to institute it, the Congress itself, with those sequestration cuts, because they really don't want them either. The defense spending increases are in there. The Republicans will like some of that. They'll actually, on the Republican side, like the transportation portions too, maybe not how the president funds it. Now, the big part, of course, is going to be where the money comes from. The president has is changing some of the tax structure, especially upon the, you know, the uber wealthy, and that's where the Republicans.
Oh my God, we can't have that, Bob. Well, he wants to tax rich people.
I mean, you know, some. I'm not going to pick on any one particular wealthy person, but the Koch brothers might need to spend more for TV. You know,
yeah.
You really don't want to take away their money,
right.
Do you? So it's a rhetorical question.
Indeed.
But the point of the budget I want to point out, and this is the integral political part, which you know so well of Capitol Hill, is this. The Republicans are no longer not controlling the government. The Republicans control the government. And just as we saw yesterday, Speaker Boehner, who is saying, we've done our part now on Homeland Security, it's up to the Republicans and Democrats in the Senate to do their part. Well, the Speaker never brings forth a bill saying it's up to the Republicans and Democrats in the House. You know, he runs the House. The House is Republican-controlled. Same to be said for the Senate. So they're kind of almost couching, Tom, as the Speaker sends things to the Senate, couching, well, it's up to the Democrats and the Republicans in the Senate. Well, it's Republican-controlled. So the point of that, you know, entire scenario is that when it comes to this budget, it would not be good and or proper or accepted for the Republicans to just simply say no. They are now running the show, and therefore they have to be compelled somehow to produce a budget, which the president can then veto if he so chooses.
Right.
So this is a little bit different scenario. Now, it doesn't go back to the Clinton-Gingrich-Dole era, because that was even a different world back then, and different personalities. You don't have the same, you have the whole Tea Party element now, which, you know, wasn't really even created as strong at that point in time.
Right.
But I think it's going to be a very interesting scenario as this goes back and forth with this budget.
Yeah. It's going to be real interesting to see how this plays out. I don't know how to describe it beyond that.
But again, they'll have to, you know, yield some responsibility. Chris Christie, we were talking about Vaccine Gate, and
mm-hmm.
Chris Christie is backtracking. And this doesn't seem to be, and I didn't catch all the conversation, but I was listening, you know, interesting though when your caller called. But this doesn't seem to be breaking down as a red or blue state issue, Tom. Mm-hmm. If people are, you know, in different positions on this thing, and I think Chris Christie thought he was somehow buying into a bit of the quote real conservative angle there, and he is now completely backtracked on what he said about.
Well, he got bit in the butt really badly when he went after that Ebola nurse, you know, the nurse who came back from Africa and was in New Jersey, and he basically put her in jail for a couple of weeks.
Correct.
You know, and there was nothing wrong with her, and she was saying, I'm a nurse, I know if I'm sick, and I'm not sick, damn it. And he just made a complete fool out of himself, misusing the power of the state and of his governorship in an attempt to raise his profile as the guy who's getting tough on disease. So I think maybe having been burned with that, that might have been informing his thinking when he said, well, it should be parents' choice. But I don't know. I'm just guessing.
Went the other direction. Of course, Rand Paul came out and said what he said.
Yeah.
He knew some people that were affected that had some type of form of mental retardation off of a measles vaccine, but, you know, there can be side effects on anything. But I think that Chris Christie was trying to, you know, basically sort of get in the fray on this, thinking it was a type of issue that he could maybe run with for a little bit. By the way, speaking of running, Scott Walker, Rand Paul are ahead of the entire GOP pack in Iowa.
Yeah, I've been saying for months that Scott Walker is going to be the Republican nominee because he is the Koch brothers guy. Remember that when those guys punked him and he thought it was David Koch calling?
Yes.
And they were saying all kinds of awful things, like, you know, the phony David Koch was saying, you know, we're going to get these bastards and, you know, all this kind of stuff.
Right.
And Scott Walker's like, yes, sir, yes, sir. He's the billionaire's bat boy, shall we say. They run the Republican Party.
Because this is amazing. This is Iowa. This is an Iowa poll. Iowa, as we know, next to New Hampshire is the big deal.
Yeah.
Scott Walker and Rand Paul are the two ahead. Jeb Bush, Chris Christie, and Ted Cruz, of course, Ted Cruz, but they're lacking. They're in single digits.
Well, here's another thing that causes me to believe that that Scott Walker is the Koch brothers guy, and that is that today Rush Limbaugh basically came out and endorsed him.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. Or he said he spoke well of him. You know, he said, "Oh yeah, Scott Walker, he's a great guy. He's good." You know, they're starting to line up right now, Bob.
Well, he's at 15%. Ron Paul's at 14%, and then Huckabee comes next. Yeah. And then Ben Carson, and then Jeb Bush.
Wow. Amazing.
So hang on.
Yeah.
Backward.
There you go.
Thank you.
Congressman, thank you so much.
Thank you, sir.
Bob Ney, author of Sideswiped with the Talk Radio News Service. Thank you, Bob. Good talking with you. We'll be back with as we continue our conversation about what is the appropriate role of government when it comes to things like herd immunity.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com, America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com, Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. You will recall, if longtime viewers, watchers, readers of my stuff, I have made good use over the years of an article that the BBC published on the 18th of September, 2002. It was a Wednesday. And the title is More Suicides Under Conservative Rule. Now, there's just a certain logic to this. When conservatives run the economy, it works well for the billionaires and for the corporations, and it does not work well for working people. This is a simple reality. And then the conservatives go ahead and try to make things even worse, you know, like John Kasich in Ohio right now saying, let's jack up the sales tax, which all the poor people pay, and let's reduce the income tax, which the rich people pay. And the hundreds of millions of dollars we will lose by cutting the income tax for rich people in Ohio will make up by raising the sales tax in Ohio on pretty much everything that poor people have to buy. Working people, middle class people, let them pay for it. So this original piece back in 2002, and yes, I am going to bring this to today in just a moment. This is not an op-ed. This is not some commentary by some, you know, liberal commentator or even an economist. This is news reporting by the British Broadcasting Corporation, BBC. And I quote, the suicide rate increases under conservative government, research suggests. The Australian team analyzed suicide statistics for New South Wales between 1901 when the federal government was established in 1998. They then looked at the political regimes dominating both state and federal governments in New South Wales. This is the largest of the states in Australia. It's where the city of Sydney is located, which have consistently been either under Labor or Conservative control. Researchers took into account periods of drought in World War II because of their economic and psychological impact. After adjusting for these factors, the figures clearly showed, I'm quoting the BBC, the figures clearly showed the highest rates of suicide occurred when both conservative state and federal governments were in power. Conversely, the lowest rates of suicide occurred when state and federal governments were both Labor, that would be liberal. When the conservatives ruled both state and federal governments, men were 17% more likely to commit suicide than when labor was in power. Women were 40% more likely to kill themselves. This is a 100-year-long longitudinal study. It's absolutely astonishing. They continue, the BBC, rates have been lower, suicide rates have been lower under the labor governments, but soared under the last conservative regime, which began in 1979 under Margaret Thatcher. Then suicides fell when the more moderate John Major came to rise, and they rose slightly when Tony Blair came to power. They've since fallen. Now, this was back in 2002. Overall, they say, and this is how they wrap up the article. Actually, the last sentence is the UK Conservative Party refused to comment on the research. But the paragraph before that reads, overall, they say the figures suggest that 35,000 people would not have died had the Conservatives not been in power. Equivalent to one suicide for every day of the 20th century or two suicides for every day that the Conservatives ruled. Okay, that is the entire 20th century. Now let's look at Greece. Keep in mind, the Republicans are promoting austerity. They're promoting the policies that the conservatives promoted in the UK. Smaller government, less social safety net, work harder, earn less money if you're in the bottom 50% or the bottom 90%, and work less hard and make more money if you're in the top 10%, particularly if you make your living, if you make your money with money, if you're a capitalist. Very low taxes on capitalists. So what happened when Greece, when austerity, conservative austerity, the stuff that Paul Ryan wants us to suffer under, the stuff that John Boehner wants us to suffer under, the stuff that Mitch McConnell wants us to suffer under, the stuff that President Obama is pushing back against right now with his budget proposals, and the Republicans are basically laughing at him, saying, no way, we're not going to do that. We are going to cut Social Security, the Republicans say. We are going to voucherize Medicare, the Republicans say. They wrote it into the rules of the House of Representatives that when Social Security disability runs out of money in the next 24 months, that they cannot move money out of the Social Security Retirement Fund into the disability fund, which they've done dozens of times, well over a dozen times. Ronald Reagan did it twice. George W. Bush did it once, or at least Congress did under them. But no, they're not going to allow themselves to do that, so they're going to create this phony crisis so that they can use that as an excuse to cut Social Security. Republicans are all about austerity. John Kasich imposing austerity in Ohio. Sam Brownback in Kansas imposing austerity. What happened? He blew a $1 billion hole in the side of his in the side of his state's budget. But hey, the Koch brothers lives in Kansas, and their income taxes, their state income taxes went way down. So bringing it back to today, this is an article by Andrea Germanos, who is a staff writer over at CommonDreams.org. The headline: austerity linked to 30-year high in Greek suicides. Austerity measures imposed on Greece in 2011 correspond to a significant spike in suicides, health researchers have found. They found that June 2011, this was published in the online journal BMJ Open, U.S., Scottish, and Greek researchers looked at these stats from 1983 to 2012, and during that 30-year period, they looked at all the suicides. 2012 had the highest months of suicide. Starting in June 11th, when the second round of austerity measures rolled out, this is when people started getting laid off. Greek government employees got laid off. People started losing their health care. It was limited, term limited to 1 year. You could have health insurance for 1 year, and after that, the Greek government didn't pay for it, did away with free food, did away with free health care, did away with housing support, cut the minimum wage, cut retirement benefits by 30-40%. The researchers found that June 2011, when a second round of austerity measures, this Republican economics rolled out, quote, marked the beginning of significant, abrupt, and sustained increases in total suicides. Male suicides rose by 19%. Total suicides rose by 36%. A lot of women killing themselves. Suicides by women in Greece also underwent an abrupt and sustained increase in May of 2011 following austerity-related events, wrote the researchers. Conversely, the study found that during a time of economic prosperity, now this would be economic prosperity for the average working person, because right now Greece has economic prosperity for the very rich, but the average working person is screwed. Conversely, the study found that a time of economic prosperity in January of 2002 when the euro launched corresponded with a 27% decrease in suicide. Conservative rule, suicides go up. Why do suicides go up? Because life gets hard for everybody except the top 10%. The bottom 90%, the bottom 99%, but in particular the bottom 90%, life gets rough under Republican conservative austerity, and it drives up suicides, whether it's in the UK, whether it's in Australia, now Greece. We're seeing this all over the place. And I'm guessing if we were to look at the United States, you would see the exact same statistics. It's time to end the Republican insanity. Another part of the Republican insanity appears to be Chris Christie and Rand Paul, two guys who will never be president of the United States, going off on these weird, oh yeah, vaccines, it's a choice.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Maybe if you want to have yellow fever vaccine, because we don't have a yellow fever problem, but measles, that should not be a choice. We'll be back. Welcome back. George, watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Network in Eureka, California. Hey, George, what's up?
Well, thank you very much, Tom. This conversation about civilizations between you and Joe Madison this morning, that was kind of interesting, and to the point where we keep referring to Ronald Reagan. After he destroyed California, he went on to the United States, and he kept saying, and he stated, government is the problem.
Right. Well, that was his inaugural address.
Civilization. Pardon me?
I'm sorry. That was in his inaugural address, his first address to the people. Anyway, back to you, George. You were saying.
Yeah, well, that was after he took care of California.
Yeah.
But in the process, thinking about the government is the problem, and you were talking about civilization. Civilization in the dictionary is a process up from slavery, from savagery. Savagery is basically mauling something. And if you think about what civilization is, it's the protection of the weak from the strong.
Right.
And if you think about all of that, my gosh, what? No wonder the rich and the powerful do not want protection to keep from mauling the lower class or the poor amongst us.
Right. They want to be deregulated.
Three rules or laws. One of them against sheer evil. The other one against rapidity or rapaciousness.
Right.
And the third one is against, well, just basic, the common stop signs need to be paid attention to.
Yeah.
And if we just did against greed, a law about that, evil, and just basically the normal rules of the of getting together, working together, I should say.
Right.
So basically, civilization is the protection of the weak from the strong.
Civilization is what protects us from predators like, you know, billionaire funders of right-wing machines.
That's right.
Wow.
And so that's why Reagan wasn't really interested in fomenting or putting government first, because government does protect us from the strong.
Well, this is the thing that you know, we all understood back in the 50s, the 60s, the 70s. Everybody pretty much understood that the only power that could stand up, there were only two powers that could stand up against organized money, and that was the power of a union and the power of government. And organized money could be pretty damn predatory. I mean, you had, you know, corporations literally, and Pickard had started out as basically an assassination service for corporations, you know, fat cats who didn't want unions pestering them. And there's been no shortage of union agitators and, you know, whatnot murdered over the years. You had Americans being, you know, killed by the Brits in our successful attempt to separate from that country. I'm absolutely with you. This excellent point. George, thank you for calling and making it. It is 20 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back.
In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
Past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, fair and only slightly unbalanced. Kevin in Raleigh, North Carolina. Hey, Kevin, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, Tom, you're talking about austerity, and, you know, I think we're going to see austerity one way or another. I think that the problem is that you don't mention the spending of government leading to austerity. As long as we have a Federal Reserve system, just like Greece, we will end up with the same problems Greece had. And
actually, Greece does not have a Federal Reserve system.
That, we have an $18 trillion debt on top of that.
That's not a problem.
Austerity.
Yeah, that is not a problem. The $18 trillion debt that we have, our deficit is declining, our debt is going to decline. If President Obama's budget was enacted, you would see a steady decline in both our deficit and our debt. And besides that, if our deficit and our debt were a problem right now, the Treasury would have to pay 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9% in order to get people to buy our debt. And right now, people are buying our debt at 1.2%. There is no problem.
You have China trying to dump the dollar as the reserve currency. There's so much.
Sure, it's got nothing to do with our debt. They're trying to do that because they want hegemony.
And it causes instability. On top of that.
Kevin, it doesn't cause instability. The world is a stable place. Our national debt is private savings. Do you know what happened in 1836 during the administration of Andrew Jackson?
Go ahead.
For the first time in the history of the United States, the federal debt was completely paid off. Andrew Jackson campaigned on this hard money campaign of he was going to shut down the Second Bank of the United States, which he did. No more, you know, even something close to the Fed. No more federal bank. The states are issuing their currency. And he paid off the federal debt. The federal debt went to zero. Within 12 months, this nation was in the most severe depression in its history. It took 6 years before the needle even started to move. Andrew Jackson provoked, by paying off the national debt, one of the worst economic crises this country has ever had. Why? Because your national debt is private savings. People who have a lot of money, or institutions that have a lot of money, who want to be able to safely save it and earn a small level of interest, but with a high level of safety, want to buy government treasuries. And if you do away with those government treasuries, those people start looking for other place to put their money. And there is no place that is as safe as U.S. treasuries. And so they end up buying things like stock in Goldman Sachs. And then, you know, you have an inflation, have a bubble that gets created, and the bubble bursts, and the economy falls apart.
Nobody's buying our government treasuries.
Kevin, if they weren't buying our government treasuries, we would have to be offering 10% to get people to buy them. The fact of the matter is there's more demand for government treasuries right now than there is supply.
There is demand right now. Yes, but that's based on the quantitative easement of the Federal Reserve.
No, there's demand right now, Kevin, because people want – there's a lot of surplus cash, and people want to put it in something that's safe. I'm telling you, if you want to be freaked out about a federal deficit, the one to be freaked out about is our trade deficit. Our trade deficit is the reason why basically one out of seven – you know, one-seventh of our economy is now owned by foreign companies, foreign people, or foreign governments. That has nothing to do with our budget deficit. It's our trade deficit. This is the real crisis here. Kevin, thanks for the call. I've said what I have to say, I guess, and so have you. Russell in Hendersonville, North Carolina. You want to get back to vaccines, Russell?
Yeah, hey, Tom. Well, first of all, I've got 2 points, and my son is autistic, and the meme that goes around that vaccines don't necessarily have anything to do with autism. In my personal experience, we gave our son the MMR, which is measles, mumps, and rubella, and within 2 days he was in the hospital, and from that time on he didn't speak. We've done a lot of kind of alternative stuff to get him back to where he should be, and he's now pretty much a normal kid. But I don't necessarily think vaccines themselves do all the damage. I think there's a lot of other pollutions involved and everything as well. But to basically say that there's no correlation, I don't really think it's true. I've got, you know, maybe 10 friends who are in our same boat that we've met through our associations with autism.
But Russell, the symptoms of autism show up typically about the same time that kids typically get vaccinated, whether they were vaccinated or not.
This was immediate. This wasn't, you know, like get the shots and then 18 months later somebody, you know, he stops doing it. This was immediate. We have a good friend whose daughter is not even functioning at all, and within an hour of her vaccine, she was in the hospital and was there for a week, and she's got massive brain problems now because of it. So, you know, and at the time, before 2000, when they did have ethyl mercury in the shots, they themselves, you know, the manufacturer said, hey, we got to take this out because the MMR is basically three shots in one, and they were using a third of what they considered the toxic dose for a full-grown man to what they call attenuate the shots.
Mm-hmm.
And when you put all three of those together, all of a sudden it's a toxic dose. And they themselves in 2000 took the ethyl mercury out of childhood vaccines.
Right.
But they're still in a lot of other vaccines that everybody else gets for, you know, their flu shots and whatever. And it's not necessary. First of all, they could do individual shots because it's essentially a preservative.
Right. I agree. I started out by pointing that out. We've had Bobby Kennedy on this program. He wrote a book about it recently about thimerosal. Bobby Kennedy, who has vaccinated all of his children. And his point is, it is possible to get vaccines that don't have thimerosal, that don't have mercury in them.
Right.
And
my point was that, you know, right now there's this, you know, we got a vaccine, to the point of some people saying it should be mandatory. And there are some children who it can affect. And without us knowing what will happen to those children, you know, any type of mandatory thing. I mean, you know, I'm up in arms. You know, they'd have to come after me because, you know, my son would not get any more vaccines ever, you know, because it obviously affected him. He's one of those, you know, maybe 10% of the children or whatever it is that this is a problem.
No, I understand what you're saying, Russell. And one of my kids, two of my three kids suffered a pretty strong reaction to MMR. One of them suffered a very strong reaction to MMR. And personally, I think that they should split those three vaccines apart and they should vaccinate kids with them over a period of a few weeks or a few months rather than give them all at once. Their concern is a public health concern that, you know, people won't show up to the doctor's office three times. They will for one time. But I get what you're saying. Russell, thank you for the call. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
This is not going to go away any day soon, this debate, this issue. Which is probably a good thing that we're having the conversation. We'll be back. Minutes before the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. The place where despair is not an option. Action is the antidote to despair. I'm telling you. From personal experience. Randy in Ottawa, Iowa. Hey, Randy. What's up?
Hi, Tom. We had some statistics that were released here a couple of weeks ago in Iowa, and the suicide rate went up 17% in the year 2013.
Whoa. What happened with 2013?
Well, I don't know. I haven't seen the 2012, or that was from 2012. So we went through a lot of things after the crash, too, where Whirlpool and a lot of corporations left Iowa. I think it's kind of hard to narrow it down. I think a lot of it's just a trickle-down insanity from this right-wing. We don't care about, we're not connecting with people like we should. And then the governor, the Republican governor, who is Terry Branstad, who was elected in 2010, has just in the last 10 days tried to unilaterally tried to close two of the four mental hospitals in Iowa.
He's a Ronald Reagan wannabe?
Well, I think that's what it is. And basically his defense was that, well, they can get, now that we have Obamacare, or now that we have the Affordable Care Act, that they can get these services in their own communities. And the problem is that sometimes people get locked in a rut in their community, and sometimes they have to get away from their community to see the point.
Yeah.
So sometimes getting out of the community actually helps a patient.
Right. So are you of the opinion, as a consequence of all this, that living in Iowa, that as Iowa gets more Republican and more conservative, that suicides are going up there? Was that the essence of what you're saying?
I think it is. I think it's basically, it is part of the agenda, or it's part of the movement that's going that way, that they don't really care so much about people who aren't producers.
Yeah, I'll bet there's a Sir Francis Galton rationale there. Well, you know, survival of the fittest. These folks are not the fittest, and so they're committing suicide. They're cleaning up the gene pool for us. You know, I can just hear the whole, you know, the right wing meme machine, the thinking that goes behind that. They might even view the rise in suicides as a good thing. You know, it's getting rid of the weak ones. It's just astonishing. Randy, thank you for the call. Thanks for sharing that with us. Dave in Armstrong Creek, Wisconsin. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Tom. Yeah, on the inoculation thing, I think the conservative point of view a lot of times is they bring it out into a freedom thing. Like, I've got the freedom to do whatever I want, whenever, as long as it's good for me.
Right.
Whereas, you know, the liberal point of view is that, you know, with the best information available and this thing is proven to work, I will do this for the greater good.
Right.
And there can be some exceptions to any kind of medicine, you know. There can be side effects. But I think it comes right down to that seems to be the conservatives that I talk to.
Well, and there's even a political piece to this. Shane, do you have that you haven't found it? Okay, no problem. You know, Hannity, I'm looking at MediaMatters.org, quote, this is apparently, oh, you got it?
Not rely just on vaccines to have a healthy society. I'm not trusting President Obama to tell me whether to vaccinate my kids,
this
by the
vaccine.
Way.
Whoa, you know? Okay, so Sean Hannity, I'm not trusting President Obama to tell me whether to vaccinate my kids. Really? Yeah. So is that what you're talking about, Dave?
Well, yeah, and that's basically, yeah. It's just that, you know, that I guess the conservative point of view is kind of a more selfish, where, you know, the liberals tend to be more, you know, for the good of society instead of, you know, just my own interests.
Yeah, those are our reasonable broad brush characterizations. Dave, thanks for the call. Well said. Laura in Chicago. Hey, Laura.
Yes, hi. Tom, I have to disagree with you on this vaccination issue, and I'm a family physician. And because there are so many countries with different vaccination schedules, we have a lot of evidence, you know, epidemiological evidence about this. And every vaccine and every child has to be taken very separately. And these schedules, the timing of the vaccine, the multiple vaccines and the shots. Right now, if you follow the schedule that the U.S. CDC puts out, by the age of 6, you have gotten 34 shots, and some of those are multiple immunizations. If we separate them out into individual shots, it'll be 48 shots by the age of 6. And there are other adjuvants besides Thimerosal. There's aluminum. There is formaldehyde. It is a far more complex thing than you're talking about. And so I would really welcome a debate on your show between one of the scientists that actually knows what's in these vaccines, one of the scientists that, you know, from the CDC. Also, we physicians don't necessarily believe everything that the FDC or the CDC and the FDA tell us.
Right.
So this
Laura, as a physician, are you of the opinion that widespread national vaccination ended smallpox and polio?
I think that there is some evidence that, It did something for polio. And I think that there's a lot of evidence that some of the diseases were on the downswing anyways because of sanitation and better nutrition.
Yeah, I think you could argue that for smallpox, which had started fading before the widespread vaccines.
Right.
But if you look at, when I was in Africa, back in the 80s when I was in Africa, they were just starting to aggressively go into some of these tribal regions in western Uganda and vaccinate people and up in Kenya for polio. And there was just this noticeable difference between the polio-free areas that had been vaccinated and the polio-ravaged areas that weren't. I mean, this
but we also have done that. We've created a lot of havoc with the polio because of the different forms of vaccination that did have serious side effects. And so I just want to list things that have been tied to vaccinations, not just the thimerosal, arthritis, the ADHD, autism spectrum, autoimmune disorder, mitochondrial disease. There are a lot of effects of vaccinations.
I'm trusting you that you actually are a physician and not just somebody who's calling a talk show and pretending to be one.
I am.
What would your advice be to a parent who is wondering because I'm thinking, if I was raising my kids all over again, and you know, we raised three kids and we went through all this, I would have probably the one thing I would have done differently is I would have asked if the MMR vaccine can be split out into three separate shots, and I can get the single dose vials that have no preservatives in them at all. Is that irrational or is that a rational thing?
That is a total rational to understand what's actually in these immunizations for sure. I would not take the CDC schedule as I was alerted to this when they started the hepatitis B at the newborn. This is ridiculous. Unless you're a hepatitis B carrier, if you're a hepatitis B positive mother, then there is absolutely no reason to give a newborn a hepatitis B vaccination. So I started wondering about this at that point. And then the vaccination schedule just grew like exponentially.
Yeah, it kind of depends on where you're going. I mean, I got hepatitis B in Israel.
Right, but as a newborn, you know, unless you're going to a hepatitis C, you remember it's bloodborne, it's sexually transmitted. So
I don't think so, because I didn't get any blood and I didn't have sex with anybody. I was told when I was there that it was food. Or is that Hep A? Am I mixing them up?
That's Hep A.
Okay.
That's Hep A. Hep A is where you're going. Hep B is bloodborne or sexually transmitted.
Oh, okay.
And it can be transmitted from the mother.
Yeah.
So unless your mother is Hep B positive, there is absolutely
so Hep
no
B is like Hep C thing in that regard. Okay. I had my hepatitis mixed up. I'm sorry. I don't disagree that maybe we've gone crazy. You know, we've got too many vaccines and we're vaccinating for diseases that we don't need to vaccinate for. And Hep B sounds, you know, fairly high on that list. But measles and mumps and rubella in particular, which if a pregnant woman gets, can cause birth defects. These are serious conditions, are they not, Laura?
They are serious conditions for people that are at risk. And I want you to know that I went down to Haiti and I was working at Haiti after the earthquake. And there was a measles outbreak that was coming down from the hills. And I, even though I'm very highly concerned about the vaccinations, I, you know, got out there and I was so happy to see that the Cuban doctors were out there vaccinating for MMRs because the conditions were so ripe for an absolute, you know, epidemic, right? Everybody was sleeping in tents. There was no sanitation. So every condition, every child, and every vaccination and every illness must be taken separately. And so what I want to encourage us to have is a huge conversation about this. What's in these vaccines? How often are we giving them? And I stood up in 2005. I stood up to the American College of Pediatrics, and they had an immunization panel at a big a seminar. And there were several thousand pediatricians there. And one of the things that's happening in the vet world is that they're using titers, antibody titers, to determine whether the dogs need further vaccination or not.
Right. How activated has your immune system become that you can measure with the titers?
Well, you know, in 2005, not one pediatrician on the panel was even knew anybody that was studying the use of titers in the children's immunization schedule.
That's remarkable.
That's ridiculous.
Laura, thanks for the call. We got to take a break here, but thanks so much for listening to WCPT in Chicago. We'll be back. It's the Tom Hartman program, 15 minutes before the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We'll be back. Stick around. And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Harry in Peoria, Illinois. Hey, Harry, what's up?
Oh, man, everything's very good. I just want to make a comment pertaining to the race situation.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I wanted to make mention is I feel like everyone, by this being Black History Month and just for knowledge for everyone, regardless of their color or whatever, there's a program out. I've seen it several times over the years about the history of mankind. I'm sure you're aware of it. That's been scientifically evidenced that mankind started on the continent of Africa.
Yeah.
People should learn how the people in Africa homogenized in different parts of the world, and why they look like they look, to give an example of the Aboriginals in Australia, how they look, why they look like they look, and the other people that homogenized there from England and other parts of the country due to their melanin levels.
Yeah, these are just environmental adaptations, Harry. This has nothing to do with competence or intellect or compassion or humanity. It's just a physical adaptation to an environment.
Exactly. That's exactly what happened, okay? And it's one thing not to make anybody feel inferior or superior, okay? I want you to definitely understand where I'm coming from, okay?
Right.
But by this being Black History Month, I'm very glad to see that old adage that's been utilized since the 30s. I'm 81 years old when I heard it all. That it was a time, you know, if you were white, you're all right. If you're yellow, you're mellow. If you're brown, stick around. If you're black, stay back. And that used to be an old saying that's been going on since the 30s in the Black community.
Wow.
You know, to the point whereas if your hair was not straight, but there was a lady named C.J., Madam C.J. Walker, invented hair straightening products for the Black female population, that because it was a thing at one time, if your hair was so-called kinky or nappy, that meant bad. Just like even today you hear people, in even in the Black community, say your hair is bad if it's kinky, and it's good if it's straight.
Right.
Okay, look at Duke Ellington. Just look at all the musicians. You know, doing that every day, all had their hair straightened with chemical products and everything, okay? Because it was a time where, due to a personal inferiority complex that Black people had adopted, by various means, however, that they felt like that, you know, Nina support, I'll give you an example, Nina Simone was ugly because her lips was big and her hair was nappy.
Yeah.
Whereas Alicia Keys or one of the most, you know, some of the other young ladies of the day, if they're light skin, their hair is long, you can shake it. You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
That means it's good. Okay, so that separation, I think that's a self thing that Black folks have to come out of and have come out to a large degree. You understand what's good and bad?
Yep.
One thing, I'm not going to tell you much longer, but people have to realize once they learn their history of mankind and where we all came from, you're going to find out, man, we really all brothers and sisters for real. Okay, because if you came from some outside race of people, when it was only the original race, but the Black folks in Africa, so that means anybody else, man, you still relate them to your cousin.
There you go. There you go. Harry, thanks a lot for the call. Well said. We'll be back. 10 minutes before the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Vicki in Albuquerque, New Mexico. You're on the air. You are a nurse practitioner?
Yes, I'm a pediatric nurse practitioner, clinical nurse specialist, and I have been in pediatrics for over 30 years with children and in primary care a lot of that time. And I had just a couple comments. One is that, you know, any parent, I don't know if they know this, but most parents don't
don't ask, that if you don't want your child to have a vaccine that has mercury in it, you need to speak up and say, you know, I don't want my child to have that vaccine. Or there's most vaccines are made, there's some with mercury and some without. So
right.
They have a choice.
Yeah, and usually it's the multiple
right
dose. It's the multi-dose ones that have the thimerosal, the mercury in them, because you
yeah.
inject room air into the bottle, into the vial as you suck out dose after dose, and that room air may have a contaminant, so there needs to be a preservative. The single dose vials, though, have no preservative in them because they don't need to they're only exposed to the air when they're opened.
So there's ways, and you can even split up, you know, the NMR. You know, you can split it up into three different doses, you know, three different vaccines if they prefer. And parents need to speak up instead of just outright refusing.
Right.
They need to speak up. But I am for vaccines and, immunization because of the, like you said, about the herd immunity. I have seen epidemics even in Albuquerque where young children are getting whooping cough and babies get it. When babies get it, they usually die. That's very common.
Right.
That's why we have these vaccinations.
Right.
And, you know, reaction to a vaccine, like a high fever, I've seen this in my own grandchildren. I have 9 grandchildren, and I've seen some reactions when they've had immunizations. But that's not the same as what people are thinking that they're getting damaged from. You know, a severe reaction could be a kind of allergic reaction. It's not the same thing as what they're talking about, what they're thinking.
Right. Well, it's an immune reaction. You're getting an illness, actually, you know.
Right. I've had a reaction, too, from some shots I've had to go for overseas. And,
yeah, me too.
And
yellow fever is terrible.
Reaction.
Yeah.
I've had typhoid fever shot, and it was horrible.
Oh, it was the typhoid. That was the one that turned my arm black, as I recall.
I got typhoid fever from it, a mild form.
Yikes.
It was pretty sick, but that's not common. Most people have immunizations, and I've given immunizations over and over again, and most people have if they have any reaction, it's a slight fever, and this, I'm talking about children now.
Right.
That's it. And, you know, that's minor. But the last thing I want to say is that, the question is, do parents have a right to, not immunize their children so that other children are immunized, but if you don't have, like, permanent immunity, like you were talking about, all it takes is one child to expose, they had an incident in Disneyland recently.
Yeah.
And measles is very, very, highly contagious. And when, you know, we'd have something like that in the hospital, everything would be shut down. You couldn't go in there, in the rooms or anything. You know, do they have a right to just take, you know, say, okay, my kid's not going to have it, but the other children are going to have to take that, take the shots, and hopefully my child won't get it. But there's more and more of these, diseases going
around. What are your thoughts, Vicki, on the proliferation of vaccines? The idea that we're vaccinating kids against hepatitis B, for example, when most people will never in their lives be exposed to it.
Well, hepatitis B can be very contagious as far as what it is bloodborne. You're right. But I think that, you know, people have the right to speak up and say, hey, can we wait till my child is 6 months old or a year old or something until they get that?
Right.
I mean, they need to sit down with their pediatrician or family practitioner or nurse practitioner like I am and say, you know, I have a concern. These are my concerns. Can we split these up? And, yeah, some of those ones that, you know, you can wait for, like Hep B, okay? You know, definitely, I don't see any reason why you couldn't wait longer. I see no reason why you couldn't. I did get it, you know, many years ago before, you know, when they came out and as a nurse. But I was around blood that was positive for hepatitis B, and I didn't get it, but I didn't stick myself with any needles either or cut myself or anything around it. But, you know, nowadays, because it is so common with so much of the population, I think.
So the bottom line here, Vicki, is if you're a parent and if you're concerned, ask if you can get vaccines that are preservative free. and single dose right. rather than multiple dose vaccines.
Absolutely.
And I would say
I would encourage that.
Yeah, and that should ameliorate most people's concerns. Vicki, thank you for the call. Yeah. Thanks for the information. Great to hear from you. Robert in Gray Court, South Carolina. Hey, Robert, what's up?
Yes, good afternoon. Well, a lot of the problems I think we have with illnesses is due to poisons being put into our food chain or our food supply.
Yeah, I don't disagree.
For example, when I was running a small farm, we used DDT and arsenic to fight the boll weevil.
Yeah, and arsenic causes cancer.
Yes, I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think Typhoid Mary would be quarantined today? If she were, would she have conservative support? Be freed or set out into the public.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm not sure that this is a conservative liberal issue. I think it's more of a distrust authority and government versus trust authority and government. And I think most people fall somewhere in the middle of that spectrum. And so there's some concern, but on the other hand, hey, maybe it's the best thing with regard to Typhoid Mary. I don't know. I don't even know the story, frankly, of Typhoid Mary. I thought it might be apocryphal. But, Robert, thank you for the call. And, I don't disagree with you. We need to be concerned about the toxins and the poisons in the food. Thanks so much for being with us today. We will be back tomorrow. Hale and hearty, hopefully. Knock wood. And don't forget, democracy begins with you. It's not a spectator sport. You got to show up. Tag, you're it. See you tomorrow.
Been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit tomhartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com, everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com, America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com, Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at tomhartman.com.